It's the Good Glow podcast with Ryan Tuberty. This season of the Good Glow is brought to you with thanks to Boyne Valley Honey. In some brilliant news, Boyne Valley Honey is the official breakfast partner of Pieta's Darkness Into Light 2026, proudly supported by Electric Ireland. Right now, you can pick up a special promotional pack in stores, and with every bottle sold, 25 cent is donated to Pieta, supporting the incredible life-saving support they provide. More than 40,000 hours of therapy are provided through Pieta services each year, so make sure to pick up a promotional pack of Boyne Valley Honey in stores. It's a small way to make a big difference. What a pleasure and an honour to sit down with Ryan on the Good Glow today. So I wanted to get into the healing with Ryan today. I wanted to talk about when life suddenly shifts and nothing feels the same anymore. When you feel like you're looking at your life from the outside in and you can't quite recognise it anymore. After years and years in the spotlight and a very public chapter that changed absolutely every part of his life. How did Ryan find his way through the stress, the noise, and into an entire new version of his life? What a shift, what a change, and how did he navigate that? But this conversation, it isn't about the headlines, the money, the job, RTE. It's about what happens after, in those long days when it's just you. The healing, the resilience it takes to get through a time like that. The unnoticed moments that actually bring you back to yourself, to reality. Hearing the birds again. Leaning and really relying on the people who love you and support you and hold you up in those dark, dark moments. How did Ryan find steadiness in it all? How did he come back to himself? And how did he emerge as a more compassionate, caring, understanding person through it all? And will Ryan run for president? We actually recorded this podcast in my home where most of my healing was done after the earthquake in my life. It was so nice to have Ryan sit down in my living room with me for this really intimate chat. So I hope if you are facing into darkness at the moment or you feel like you're in the middle of it, I hope that this conversation gives you hope. Ryan, welcome to the Good Glow. How are you?
Great. So I was so pleased to hear from you because we go back a little bit. I don't know you well, but I met you and I know who you are. And when you said, will you do the podcast? I was really happy to do it because, you know, I really liked when we spoke. And I love what you do. And the word that I've come to appreciate, admire, and love of late is resilience. And I think you are one of those great resilient people. I admire you.
Thank you so much. How are you?
I'm really good. Thank you. In fact, I'm probably the best you've seen me recently or ever. Wow. Things are going really nicely and life is grand. And I mean that in a sort of 1950s way. Life is grand, kid. Oh. You know, I'm really enjoying the world.
Because we speak, and especially on the Good Glow, about before and after. And a lot of people that come on this podcast had this before life and they have found themselves in the after something significant has happened. Does it feel like that at the moment for you?
Yeah, it does. And that's why I think, you know, it makes sense for me to be here as your guest, because I am a classic before and after in many ways. I've probably had a few befores and a few afters, you know, in life. Mm. But the most obvious one for your listeners and viewers is the work before and after. Mm. And then the madness that hit the probably the least private madness anyone's ever experienced. And the question that a lot of people want to know is, you know, how did you manage during that? And how are you since? And what was it like? And where are you at? So, you know, I'll go wherever you want to go in our conversation. We're only beginning. But the key to it is, I'm sitting here before you, extremely happy, very content, very grateful. And probably I might not have these feelings if I hadn't gone through what I went through. And I'm sure this is a theme for you, for where people go, you know, would you change anything? I'll come to all of that, of course. But it's it's made me who I am now. So I can't do anything about that. This is what I. This is all I've got for you. Mm. How about that?
That's, I like it.
Is that okay?
Like, I think when we're in the middle, the messy middle, mm-hmm. we might often, like I used to sit right there on that patio during the day with, you know, no hair in my dressing gown while my baby napped inside going through chemotherapy. And it didn't make sense at the time, but I always said to myself, actually, there's a deer just running across the field there.
There is. And do you know what? I said to that deer before I came up, I said, at about 6 minutes in...
Right when she's talking
cue
about sitting in the garden.
This is the Truman Show. Isn't that lovely?
Isn't that
go
fabulous?
On anyway. But finish the story. So you're looking out and suddenly...
So I'm looking out and I said, one day it will make sense. And actually, before I finish that question, I used to sit in that garden and we bought this house 3 months before I got sick. Hmm. And as I was sitting there, I realized that I'd never heard the birds before that moment. Do you know
yep.
what I mean?
Yep.
And... it allowed me to stop and listen. Hmm. But my original question is, has it made sense at this point or are you still in that messy middle, do you feel?
Well, first of all, I think your description is lovely. I've definitely fallen in love with nature again, the way you describe it there. There was a while when it was the messy middle, that's a really lovely description, where I couldn't listen to music and I was really, really sad and I couldn't... I could always read, like I'm always going to read. If I don't read, I'll die. But just nothing felt beautiful. And when the sun started to come out again, and that's really the lesson to everyone, hopefully the sun comes out for everyone again. And just like you described it, it really reminded me of that birdsong, which is probably the greatest orchestra of them all. And that when you hear it, you go, you're alive again, you know, and you're open to the universe and the sounds and the and nature and that deer crossing the field beside us here, and you just become attentive to it. That's it. You become attentive to it. So rather than just going, that's what it is, that's what the birds do, that's what the trees do, that's what that random deer does, you go, stop a second, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. How did that happen? How's that bird flying? How's that beak make that sound? Like, it's bonkers. And why is that one ugly? Why do we think crows are mean? They're really smart. They can unscrew things. Like, you know, and then it gets on and on and on and on. So, yeah, curiosity, isn't it?
And do you remember the time of when things started?
The bad bits.
The bad bits, yeah. But do you remember when it started to get better again?
Do I remember? Your flat white is as good as they said, if I may, just as an aside. but do I remember when the sun started to come out again? To be honest with you, I had met somebody extraordinary in Clare. And she was, I think the sun never quite got behind the clouds when she was there because... there's too much brightness. I'm flogging this metaphor, but there is. And it got dark, but it just didn't get dark enough that I couldn't see anything. And I'd largely put it down to her. And we used to quote this beautiful song by Paul McCartney, which is actually quite a recent song by Paul's of the Beatles, called My Valentine. And we often talk about it because it was desperate. And I would be running or walking, and It whatever rains, we didn't care. She said that someday soon the sun was going to shine. And she was right. This love of mine, this Valentine.
Wow.
And that quote is very special to us because it rained. Physically rained. We went out running once or twice. And I said, actually, it was like a metaphor. We went running in Connemara. And the rain started bucketing down. And I said, and it was really at the heart of the badness. And I said, let's get the hell back in. And she goes, no, let's keep going. Metaphor. Out we went, got drenched, came back in, laughed, and said, yeah, okay. So that's what it was. Yeah.
Were you good at moving the anxiety or sadness or what was going on?
No, I was terrible at moving the anxiety. Like, I don't want to dress this up and say it was, you know, I was fine. You know, I didn't know what was happening. So I was very confused because I didn't understand the nature of the kerfuffle.
Yes.
Because that's how surprised I was by it. So I was blindsided by it. And then even when it was put before me, what was going on, I still didn't understand it. I'm not that person, you know. I'm not a very technical person. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't have known details of things. And I was going, what? And they were saying, well, you know, it's like in a cartoon when the serious people come along. It's like, oh, that's all I heard. It was like being back at school. And so, you know, lesson learned, of course, you just do your homework, you know. But so it was a very peculiar time. And I didn't know what was going on. I remember thinking at one stage I was talking to my therapist and I said, crikey, I said, I'm really kind of weepy. And he said, yeah, that's okay. That's normal. He said, that's post-traumatic stress disorder. It's PTSD. I said, but doesn't the P stand for post? I said, yeah. He said, yeah. I said, I'm still in it. There's no post about this. And I said, so that lasted for a couple of months, I'd say, at its worst. And then it just started to pick up again. But it was slow. Wow. It was a slow unwind.
Thank you for talking about that.
Thank you for asking. Yeah? You know, I just don't want people who are going through the absolute horrors to think that it's easy, and to think that just because you're the guy off the TV or the guy with all the success that I've had in my career, which I've had and I'm grateful for, that it becomes easier. It doesn't matter. It's helpful that I'm not, you know, living in poverty, of course, but but emotions are, you know, universal. So yeah, it's not an easy thing. So the key, as you'll know, is communication. I think it's talking. And I think as an Irish man, I talked a lot, but I said nothing. And I didn't listen to my, and it was my job to talk to people. I talked to you on the Late Late Show, you know, that's my job. And I loved it because I was curious and I was interested in people like you. I say this respectfully to you, but I didn't listen to myself. So I probably should have been on the couch myself.
Yeah.
Being interviewed by somebody professional. But I'm a big kid.
You're
sometimes
an amazing interviewer.
Yeah, well, that's nice of you to say. But I love interviewing. I love my job. I'm fascinated by the world. I'm curious. I will die curious. And as I see older people getting older and drifting into the fog, I think the most common thing I see is a lot of people who tend to survive a bit longer in terms of mental acuity are the ones who do the crossword still.
Yes.
And are still curious about who's bombing who and why, who got assassinated last night. You know, the news is what I'm saying.
It's the blue zone way of life. It's like keep your brain busy and walk.
Go down the hill. Yeah, that blue zone was really interesting. I watched a couple of episodes of that. Why are certain places in the world full of people who live forever? And it was this, they were getting their daily exercise because they lived in hilly. All that stuff was really interesting.
Ryan, I wanted to ask you, because you said that day that you got a taxi into the Oireachtas.
I did.
Did the taxi driver know what was going on in your life that day?
I remembered the taxi driver only because he wouldn't stop talking and I wasn't in the mood. He did not stop talking. And you know, you get in taxis, you get somebody who's not from Ireland originally, who'll just look out the window and doesn't care a damn, mm-hmm. and you're going, great. You get somebody who's not from Ireland originally, who's dying to have the chats. Yeah. So it's not about Irish or not Irish. And then you'll get the Irish guy who's grumpy or hates the Late Late Show and doesn't want to look at you. And then you'll get, the most common is the guy who doesn't want to stop talking. Says the guy who doesn't stop talking. Yeah. But on this particular day, wasn't in the mood. I'll be honest with you. So I was going into the Oireachtas to confront and discuss situations that had happened, obviously, with my old employer. And I knew it was going to be a big day at the office. And I didn't know I was going to be there for 7.5 hours answering questions, but I had nothing to hide. And therefore, I wanted to go to say to them, whatever you want to know, because I'm not the bad guy here. Mm-hmm. You know, this was dressed up by somebody else and so on. So on the way in the taxi, I was a wreck. I'd been front page news for days and days, if not weeks and weeks. It was really affecting me and my whole everyone was upset. Papers went bananas. And thankfully, the people were lovely. The public were lovely everywhere I went. My God, they just went, are you okay? What are they doing to you? You know, so it was a real nice sense of minding by the public, which I'd experienced before on the Late Late. So that was lovely. Good people. And I was kind of thinking, okay, well, this is a big news story. I mean, there's no point in pretending it wasn't. It was. And we were driving past St. Michael's School there near the Marion Road. And I recall because there had been two young lads had died on holidays, like the Leaving Cert, the Magaluf style holiday. It wasn't Magaluf, but they were away. And, you know, I have two daughters and they were close enough to that age at that time, ish. And I thought, here I am, you know, self-obsessing about going in to talk to some head the balls about, you know, what might or might not have happened, according to somebody who may or may not have been putting me out front of some of their own problem. Still get my digs in there, I think.
That's okay.
Yeah, I'm really over it. I jest. I'm looking in the school gates as we're going by. Your man's still talking. I'm not listening to a word he's saying. I'm just thinking, look at those, imagine those families. What are they going home to tonight? I'm going to go home after this because I know it's going to go on till 6 or 7. And I have a bag of cans at home. I'll just love my, you know, few beers. A selection, actually. I'll come back to that because I don't want to be unserious for a second. But I knew I was going home to family and friends who were gathering to say, are you okay after this mad day? And I thought, what about those families? What are they going home to? An empty room, empty chair, empty world. And I thought, just get in there and get it on, you know, get it over with. Get it on the table and sort it out. And don't be worrying about it because, do you know what? Although it feels heavy, and it is kind of heavy in your world, it's not that heavy. That's heavy. And it put manners on me. Mm. And I dealt with the day differently as a result.
Did you? Mm. And the universe has an incredible way of putting things into perspective.
Do you think those people who mourning the deaths of their boys give a flying flute about this guy in a taxi heading in to talk to the Oireachtas about, you know, something that may or may not be important? You know, I doubt it. Anyway, that was humbling.
I think our families gather on those important days or those big days. I remember driving home from Beaumont Hospital and my whole family were in this house the day I was told I was sick, and it felt nice to come home and it felt very safe.
Do they know that you were going in to be told bad news, or did you let them know soon and they gathered?
They knew I was going in. I'd found a lump in my breast. Yeah. And 5 days later, after my scan, I was called to the hospital for a meeting.
So you knew.
Yeah.
You knew. And therefore, they knew. So when you drove up the driveway here, sorry, I'm not interviewing you, I'm asking you. And this kitchen was full of your folks and extended family. Is that what it was?
Yeah, my brothers.
Brothers. And were you having tea and coffee, or were you having a glass of wine, or what was the vibe?
We got a local takeaway. Pizzas arrived. And we all sat at that table. And that table is actually battered.
It's a beautiful table.
I'll never change it.
No.
Because it's been there in the best of times and the worst of times.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, completely.
And were your family gathered for you?
My family will gather until the last dog barks. So they'll gather at the best of times and the worst of times. It's like Dickens, you know. They don't see tragedy or triumph. They just see brother or father or son. And when I was celebrating the highs of the toy show or the lows of what happened a few years ago, they didn't treat me any differently. They were both, it was just love, you know, and it's remarkable. I just hit the jackpot with my family.
And did you feel like that really made a difference being held in that moment?
Yeah, it was the difference between drowning and having the RNLI coming out and keeping you afloat.
Because you, I suppose, in your life, you have always been the captain of the ship, probably.
Yeah.
So did it feel hard to be vulnerable in those moments?
Not really, because just to go back to the captain of the ship, in my family situation, it was very much a democracy. There were no kings.
No captains.
You know, so we do. There was very much everyone had one man, one woman, one vote. So, and I'm not the oldest. There's something to be said for that. Mm-hmm. One younger brother who actually turned out to be my chief of staff during all the madness. He was brilliant, even on his holidays. I ruined his life for 2 years. But gosh, what a guy! Like, we used to play together as boys in Connemara, in the west of Ireland, in the fields for summer after summer. And then there he was for me, right, wow, when I needed him most.
Aren't we so lucky?
Blessed, yeah.
What did it feel like pressing play on that U2 song the first day of your shift on Virgin?
So when the fan was hit by all the excrement and then that stopped and we just moved on, I got this amazing opportunity that happened really. Can I give you briefly the story?
I'd love it.
Chris Evans is a very famous presenter. I take it you love him.
I've read his book five times. Brilliant.
If anyone's interested in getting into the media business, particularly radio, mm-hmm, read Chris Evans' first book and mm-hmm, maybe a second. So I would watch him on TFI Friday as a kid and a young man. And then he was a guest on The Late Late Show. Fast forward 10 years, Chris Evans says, "Let's have coffee. I hear you're a gun for hire." Let's put it that way. And I was in London and I had a few meetings with different companies and it was all going very well. There was a really nice offer coming at me. And he said, "Don't, just let me meet you for coffee first." I said, "Okay." And he said, "Come in and meet me in Virgin Radio." Now, Virgin Radio, so if you know the Shard in London, it's mm-hmm, across the way from that. So once you get into come up out of London Bridge tube station, you see the Shard. So you know it's kind of like landing in London. It's like a cartoon, you know, it's like the Eiffel Tower. And you land and then you go into the building. And he's up in the 17th floor, so he's got a view of the whole city within the studio. It's magnificent. And as we were driving in, I was with my Noel, my agent and friend, we're going by the Thames and the radio was on and Chris Evans was on. I said, "Could you put Chris Evans on?" And for whatever reason, he could, even though it was digital, he was able to do it. Chris Evans going, "On the show today," he was saying, "oh, we got Damian Lewis." And I was going, "Oh, Damian Lewis, I love Damian Lewis, you know, Band of Brothers and all the rest of it." And he said, "But also Irish broadcasting legend Ryan Tubridy will be." I said, "What?" I said, "I'm meeting for a coffee afterwards. How can he possibly say he's joining us? I'm not." And I hadn't been on the radio for a long time. Confidence was under the water. So I said, "Please don't ask me to go on the radio. I wouldn't be able for it the way I am now." So anyway, got in and I was politely introduced to people and so on. And they were amazing and they were all very friendly. Great vibe in the place. And he said, come in on air. So the next thing, I was on air with him. And it just, my mojo came back for the few minutes I was there. I told a story, you know, it just reminded me about the old days of being on the radio and being happy. And I just realized, this is where I'm meant to be.
Yeah.
Anyway, after that, one of the bosses sent his assistant in and said, "The boss would like to meet you." I said, "Yeah." And I said, "Dan, nice to meet you." He said, "My name is Denny." I said, "I'm Ryan." He said, "We know who you are and we'd like to offer you a job. What do we need to do to get you in to join us?" So within a few months, then I was offered a contract and then I ended up being the guy who was followed Chris Evans every morning for 2 years on the radio. I loved doing it. And then after 2 years, I was getting homesick. I mean, homesick, 1 hour in the plane. But I am so Irish. I'm so love Super Value.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know? And bag of cans.
I love my bag of cans. I love my pints and O'Donoghue's. Like, I just know what I know. I know what I love and I love what I know. I always say that. I was like, "Why don't you just try it?" I said, "I don't want it." Because I like what I know and I know what I like. Leave me alone.
Did you feel like you had to do a meet and greet on the Aer Lingus flight every time you got on
it? I know them all now.
I walked past name. You on a flight. You always sit up near the front.
I do.
And I saw you and you were reading your book as everyone was boarding. But no, I'd never. But
I wish you had.
I was like, oh my God. Yeah. The fact that Ryan has to sit on this tiny tube twice a week with every Irish person getting on.
But people are very nice and they all say, you'll see the elbows. I put my head down not to want to see anyone, but just because I'm on the plane so much.
Yes.
I want to read or listen to podcasts. So anyway, that was 2 years and then it was time to come home. No doubt about it. But I'm still going back every week so today, as we're recording this, it's Friday. So I'll be going back tomorrow. I do the show for Times Radio on Sunday afternoon, and then I do another thing, an obituaries program on Monday after evening, and I fly home. I'll be home in Dunleary then about 10 o'clock.
So you're doing that show live.
The Times is live.
So you're still over and back.
3 hours of news, current affairs, pop culture. Like I said to them for this week's at the meeting, I said, "Can't, like, this is my brain on the radio. It's like the dream job. It's absolutely the right place to be for me. Mm-hmm. I'm loving it. And I said, can we do something on why you guys being the British and mostly English, why you guys hate Meghan Markle so much? I said,
yes.
I said, I'm obsessed with your obsession with hating on her, right? I said, because, and this comes back to what we were saying earlier on, you know, I think sometimes when I was going through my horror show, sometimes the press forget there's a human, and they just go for them. Right, whatever you like me or don't like me, doesn't really matter, but there's just a lack of, you know, if I had thinner skin, I could have been in a lot of trouble.
Absolutely.
But thankfully I don't, but I pity anyone who has thin skin and gets, you know, it's you, or gets shoved in front of a bus by an employer. Like, you really can be in trouble there. So the point I'm making is that I was in the middle of talking about something.
Meghan Markle.
Meghan. I met Meghan Markle outside the White House about before she met Harry, and she was introduced to me by the great John Fitzpatrick, hotelier, whom I'm sure you know. Yeah, and he said, "This is my friend Meghan. She's an actress." I said, "Nice to meet you," and she was beautiful. I mean, and I said, she was really nice, actually. I only met her for about 6.5 seconds. I said, I'd love a picture with you. Would you mind if we had a picture together? She said, no. I said, so we have a great picture of the two of us. Actually, you can Google it. Ryan and Meghan at the gates of the White House, you know, and one of my colleagues in the Late Late Show did it up on a mug going, you know, engagement couple. it was quite funny. Back to the point. God, the British press, they eviscerate her day in, day out. So we're going to do an item on that. But that's the point. You can do stuff like that. I interviewed... I'm going to geek out for just... Mm-hmm, I don't know how geeky your listeners are, but there'll be a few of them who will understand this. I like Star Trek.
Yes.
And in the original Star Trek with William Shatner, who played Captain Kirk, there was another guy who's an Asian American called Mr. Sulu, played by George Takei.
Yes.
Okay, so George Takei is now 89 years old, and I interviewed him yesterday, and I was in heaven because I couldn't believe that I was interviewing Mr. Sulu from the Starship Enterprise, all about how when he was 4 years old, he was put in an internment camp with his family because of the Pearl Harbor attacks, and now he's... You know, he's a human rights guy, and now he lives with his husband, you know, in
wow.
LA. Yeah, wow. And he's got fire in his belly, and I was just listening. So watching him going, yeah, I want to be that passionate at 89 as I am now. What happened was I was starting to drift a bit when I was in RT towards the end. The reason I left the Late Late Show was because I felt my foot was coming off the gas, and I wasn't giving as much as I should or could. So I said, I'm out. Now, the rest followed, but that was nothing, not related to leaving the Late Late. Just sadly conflated, but no relation to it. But I wanted to pursue other things. So for 20 years in RT, a place I loved working in with people I loved working with. Mm. Okay, so there's no bitterness or badness about that. It was great. It was a dream job and I loved it. I just got a little bored towards the end, and that's not good. It was like eating a most delicious six pack of the same bar. Every week you did your shopping, you got six pack of the same bar of chocolate. Now I have a selection box every week, and I don't know what bar is coming out of the box. And it's not as secure, but it's a hell of a lot more interesting now.
And that's going to keep you alive for 20 years longer.
Going to keep me going. Yeah. Bit of hunger.
Do you get that at 9:30 on a Friday? Do you have that feeling?
No. 9:30 on a Friday was the feeling just before the Late Late Show began. The Late Late Show was, if I could just put it in a little context, we did about 32 a year. I think we got one or two off, and they went on for 2 hours each time. And before I left, I said, is there any chance you could shorten the run?
Yes.
Finish it, you know, a little earlier than kind of end of May, and take in one off here and there, and maybe shorten the show to make it leaner and meaner. And they said, that's never going to happen. Now, as soon as I left, it happened, which, so be it. Circumstances change. If they had said, we'll do that, I'd probably still be presenting.
What do you do on Friday nights now?
Oh, perfect example is I'm going for my lunch, so I'll probably be having maybe the later beers on the island at that stage by the end of the night. But mostly because Saturday is now my monk-like night, because I don't go out on Saturday evening now because I've got the show on Sunday. So I take it really easy. So Friday tends to be my social night, so I tend to make
use.
Yeah, either in London or last Friday... I was at a lunch. Piers Morgan organised a lunch because he says every 6 months he says Tubbs lunch, and like
do you get a word in?
Not really. You have to fight because it's a big, it's a busy lunch. The first lunches we had together, there was 7 or 8 people. This one was big. There was about 12. And it's like Gary Lineker and Emily Maitlis and Susanna Reid was there. She was a new addition. And they're all chatty, chat face. Like it is hard to talk. And then when people start drifting off, it whittles down. And then we go down and have a few pints. And it's great. It's in the Devonshire. Do you know the Devonshire?
No.
It's in Soho. So it's this pub that has become the go-to place. Last time I was there, I was sitting there with my daughter and her fella. And it's run by an Irish guy called Oisín. You'll get lamb chops, steak, mash.
Nice.
Do you know what I mean? My kind of food.
Yeah.
And a good pint of Guinness.
Love it.
Anyway, sorry.
Because I said to Jamie just before I came in, I was like, "What do you have any questions that you think I should ask Ryan?" And
yeah.
He said, "Just about how Irish he is, and you know how nice it must be for him to be home now."
But yeah, he's right. I love being home.
So speaking of Forward and life back in Ireland, you're about to go on a tour.
Yes. I mean, this is something that I'd never thought I'd be doing, which is going on a stage show. It's one thing doing a TV show, but I haven't been in front of an audience in a meaningful way for a long, long time. So we did one in Dunleary. It sold out in an hour. So that was a good sign. And Joe O'Connor was our guest and it was great. So we have a QR code. So when you go into the lobby, you can hit the QR code with your phone and put a question in.
Oh, wow.
So all these questions. So the first part, depending on which city we're in. So Blind Boy is our guest in Limerick. Tommy Tiernan is my guest in Galway. The Brennan brothers, Francis and John, are the guests together, double hander in Cork.
Brilliant.
And we'll be announcing Dublin soon for the Olympia. And so the first part of it is me telling stories the way we've been talking today about the time I ended up playing tennis with Russell Crowe.
Yes.
Or the time, you know, Hillary Clinton sat down with me for half an hour and how we've talked 10 times since, or why I may or may not be writing a book with a crime writer soon and stuff like that. So there's all these yarns and they want to know about behind the scenes. So we lift the curtain and then we bring the guest in and do a full podcast episode about the three books from their shelf. It's not about loving books, it's about loving stories and storytelling.
Yes.
So hopefully people like it, but it's exciting. It's just another one of those bars from the selection box I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, and then the great thing is about moving around the country is you can choose a guest for each region.
We try to kind of put it in that zone, exactly that. That makes it a bit more relevant to wherever we happen to be. And all the people I'm interviewing, I've met before and interviewed before, so it's not like I'm going to be going in cold.
And I can't imagine how different the interviews would be at a live show compared to on TV.
You can imagine they'll be wilder.
Yes.
For sure. Somebody on Instagram said, "You and Tommy Tiernan, that'll be like going to see Tigger and Eeyore."
Yeah.
And I thought, I'll take that.
A short break to remind you that Boyne Valley Honey is the official breakfast partner of Pieta's Darkness into Light 2026, proudly supported by Electric Ireland. If you're in store this week, look out for the promotional packs of Boyne Valley Honey, because 25 cents from each one goes directly to Pieta, who are providing life-saving support all across the country. It's a really easy way to support such an important cause. Boyne Valley Honey's promotional packs are available in stores nationwide.
And through this, you now have experiences with people that you never would have had before, because
no.
You were so busy and probably living in your head. And has this allowed you to drop into your heart a little bit more?
Yeah, hugely so. I'm much more reflective because of time as well. I was there the other day. I called into an aunt of mine, my dad's last surviving sister. I haven't seen her for years, not even months, years. And I passed by her road, and then one day I was passing by, I said, "Stop with the must, say I will." And I replaced the word must with will, and I hit the indicator and I turned right. And I was a boy when I used to call into her, Niamh and Jim. And Jim died, and I said, "Is she going to be there? Is she okay? Is she compos mentis? I don't know. Is she still living there?" I mean, let's find out. I was on my own. because I had time.
Yeah.
I drove up the street and knocked on the door. And just like when I was a boy, I used to call in when I was about 14, 15 for tea time express cake and a coffee. I was that kind of kid.
Coffee.
Like coffee. Precocious knob. So I'd go in and say, and she did what she did since I was a kid. She put the head at the window, confused look, came through the door. She said, "And who is this?" I said, "Ryan Tuberty." And she said, "Ryan, how are you still looking the same? Okay, enough with the plumos. How are you?" "Good, good, good, good." She looked kind of the same as my aunt always did. "Come in." I gave her a hug. Didn't really ever hug her before, but I said, "I'm going to hug her." And we made coffee. She was doing the crossword, which is 96. And she started talking about her parents and her grandparents, and she's a genealogist. Every family is an archivist. She knew all these things. But that's the point I made. Anyway, it was lovely to reconnect because I had time. For the last 20 years, I've been doing a radio show every morning. I wouldn't be able to do this, you know. Yes. Here it's Friday morning, early. And I was just constantly on the hamster's wheel. Radio, 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 mm-hmm. radio, TV, 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 radio, 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 TV, 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 green room, ha, 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 next day, recover, mad night, get to Sunday, okay, get ready for Monday. Boom.
The green room must have been an intense place for you to be after.
It was intense, but I always felt the green room was like my house after at a dinner party. I always felt the guest's experience had to include a good post-show experience
really?
As well. Oh, I felt proprietorial I felt about the late. It was like you're coming to a dinner party in my house, and I want you to be happy and do photographs with everyone. And the bar was running, and you should never feel like you have to run off. And Yvonne ran the green room, and she knew by me. She'd say, "Oh, he's tired," or "He's stuck over there." Like she read my, or "It's time for him
yeah,
to go home."
It's great to have a little spotter like that.
Spotter. She's amazing. She still is amazing, actually. So, yeah, that was important. But it just added to another level of exhaustion then.
Can I tell you my green room story?
Please do.
So we brought Tally in, our baby that we had through surrogacy in Georgia. And it was the same night Daniel O'Donnell was on the show.
Legend.
And he was knocking around the green room.
Yeah.
And we brought Tally in afterwards, and Jamie was holding her. And as you know, everyone in the green room was watching the screens. They'd watched me tell the story of Tally.
Yeah.
So Jamie was standing there talking to somebody, and he felt this hand over his shoulder. And the hand landed in his blazer pocket. Okay. And he just turned around, and it was Daniel O'Donnell's hand.
Right.
And he slipped 50 quid into Jamie's blazer pocket for the baby.
You're joking.
And he never took that 50 euro out of that blazer pocket.
That
still there.
Are you serious? That is, well, that is a measure of Daniel, who is a really lovely person, and Magella. And he used to stick around, you know, in a way. Mm. It was really old fashioned. And even the money, that's a real old fashioned thing to do.
Yeah.
Now, to cross the palm with silver to say, you know, good luck. It's like, you know, when you buy a new car and somebody gives you 100 quid for petrol, you know.
Yeah.
It's a real nice
yeah.
thing. That was the petrol money.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so sweet.
Tell me, I wanted to ask this yeah. question to you, and I don't know, I'm sure you've been asked it many times before. Would you run for president?
Let me ask you this question back. Why would you ask me that?
I think you would be the perfect president. I feel like you're cultured. I feel like you love people. You love Ireland. I think you would represent the country in such a magnificent way.
Well, that's really kind of you to say that. I think a lot of people would burst out laughing if they heard that.
And I think Claire Campometti would be a lovely first lady.
First lady. Sure, she is a great first lady. Like she, you know, but yeah, it's funny sometimes when we go out and I'm on, she's the secret weapon because they go, "Yeah, he's fine. We expected that. But what the hell is this?"
She's a fabulous
She'll
person.
Talk to, she, gives, she will see the goodness in, you know, and stuff. I'll be going, I often say sometimes, you know, you marry Larry David, Claire. Like, you're in trouble here. It's like, I can be quite misanthropic when I want to be, you know, but she'll say, no, it's good. But she, anyway, sorry. Look, I mean, I come from a very political family, mm-hmm. and this politics is coursing through my veins. There's no doubt about it, as it happens. My grandfather was a TD in Galway in the 1920s on my dad's side. On my mother's side, my uncle was a Minister for Foreign Affairs and signed the Good Friday Agreement, as it turns out. And his son, Barry, is an MEP now for Dublin. And I have another cousin who's in politics. And so it's all coursing through the veins, for sure. For sure. I'm fascinated by politics and the political system. I watched the strikes recently and the protests. And funny enough, I found myself thinking, having quite a lot of sympathy for the strikers. Mm. You know, I know the popular thing for a lot of people in the main parties was to say that they're obstructive and breaking the law. I know they were, and they were both of those things. But I did feel there was, that it actually called, it required empathy,
yes,
rather than an iron fist. Mm. What would make your dad or your brother or your son drive the most important machine in their lives to the capital of whatever province they're in to cause chaos? It's not joy. There's something wrong.
Yeah.
And it goes more to more than just not being able to pay a bill. Like, it's fundamental. It's an essence of who we are. We need to look at that. And I was surprised by my own reaction. Mm. That sort of need to see, are they okay? I just felt there were
Would
men.
You have had that reaction 4 years ago?
I don't know if I would have had the same reaction. No, I don't know. I don't know. It's strange. I just felt those people need to be minded a bit, and not in a patronizing way, just in a societal way. It's a strange thing, but it just, that's how I felt. If a man is crying on the 6 o'clock news about his business, that we have to ask ourselves, how do we fix that? I mean, they were saying, but there's a rainy day fund, all the tech money and all the rest of it. If it's a rainy day fund, lads, it's raining. Mm. In fact, it's bucketing out of the heavens. Mm. Open up the purse a little bit. Anyway, sorry.
So back to the question.
Well, what I have learned is about life is to never say never to anything. So mm-hmm. who knows? I mean, I don't think I could possibly rule out some political road in the future, because I'm so interested in it and in people and in this country. So, yes. Yeah, I don't know what that looks like, but I'd be shocked if I didn't. I think, especially now that I have freedom to speak my mind. When you worked in RTÉ, you were beholden to the machine. And I was happy to be beholden to the machine. I'm not saying it. I'm not trying to rage against the machine. But now I can say what I damn well like. And I tell you something, it feels good.
That's so good.
Yeah, it feels great.
Because I think you'd said before that the Late Late Show, you feel like it came too early in your life.
Yeah, I believe that.
So I think maybe that's taught you a lesson in good timing, you know?
Yeah. So Catherine Connolly did me a favor this time around.
You've got 7 years.
But timing, no, but you're dead right. It's about timing, and it's also about maturity. And I just don't know how mature I was to do the Late Late Show that time. I just feel I could have done with a few more years. I was enjoying Tubridy Tonight, which was the show before, because it allowed me to be a bit more giddy, a bit more like who I am, who you're seeing today. And then the Late Late Show, this might seem a bit pejorative, and I hope it doesn't, but it did feel like putting on my dad's suit. Mm. It's a little bit big for me.
Yeah.
And that was kind of, the shoes were a bit clumping around. I grew into that suit, and I started asking, you know, Stacey to, you know, just tighten them up and make them, you know, really. It's a strange thing. I was quite body conscious in the sense that I was so skinny. And then I hit a lovely age, probably about 48 or something. I mean, it took that long, where I said, skinny the shit out of these suits, because that's who I am.
Yes.
And so, you know, I got this beautiful coat about 4 years ago, and it cost a few quid, and I saw it in the wardrobe. Actually, Claire saw it, and she said, what are you going to do with that? Because we're doing a bit of a cull of stuff, you know. And I said, I suppose it's a charity shop. She said, it's a beautiful guy. I said, yeah. She said, what's wrong with it? I said, it's about three sizes too big. I don't know why I bought it. She goes, well, then get it taken in. I said, yeah. Oh yeah, you could do that. Zipyard. So down I went to Zipyard. The lady, pin, came back 2 weeks later. I now have essentially, now you know they say girl math, there's man math.
Yes.
I felt I got a new coat.
Oh, fabulous.
Felt great.
Ryan, thank you so much. We have little guidance cards that we wrote, and there's 32 cards in the deck. I'll actually give you a packet before you go.
Thank you.
In it, there's a card and it says, have patience with time and the healing will follow.
Yeah, good line.
And it's one of my favorite ones. And I think you did have patience with time. But can you leave us with your last 5-star moment? You know, a moment that everything just felt like it aligned and it was perfect.
Yeah, I can tell you that straight away. Don't even have to think twice. The Abbey Glen Hotel, Clifton, December 7, 2025. I'm wearing a good suit and I'm looking down at the end of a room and there's Claire in her wedding dress. And everyone I love is in the room. And I'm standing at the top of this room, no church, just the room. And on my left is daughter one, on my right is daughter two, the most important people in the planet Earth. And the music starts, and I had no idea what the music was going to be. And it's a beautiful song I'd urge you to listen to later on called Honey Pie by the Beatles. And it's quite jaunty. Honey Pie. Da, 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 da. It's quite jazzy. And we walk down this little aisle towards Claire with everyone. As soon as they saw us and they heard that music and they saw the happiness in everyone's faces, everyone started to move their shoulders in their seats and started kind of dancing. And then they started cheering. And it was as if to say, wow, this is it. This is the essence and distillation of love. And we got there. That was my 5 stars.
Ryan, thank you so
much. Thank you for having me.
Don't be a stranger.
No, I won't. At least I'll come back again if you'll have me. This has been really lovely. You're an effortless interviewer, which means that it's very effortful. Anything that looks effortless is effortful, as you know. But you're a lovely human being and you exude and radiate kindness. And I hope life is as kind to you as you are as a person, if you don't mind me saying that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good luck.
And to you.
I loved this episode of The Good Glow. Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you enjoyed it, please hit follow, give us a review wherever you are listening. You know, there's so much that Ryan said in this episode that resonated with me, like the sun coming back out in your life again, not being able to listen to music in a really dark time. That happened to me too. And on Wednesday, myself and Jamie are going to bring you a bonus episode where we discuss this episode and bring you behind the scenes of Ryan coming to the house, recording this episode, and what present I bought him that he left with that day. So we'll be bringing you that episode on Wednesday. I hope that you will tune in for that. We're back from the Lake Garda Half Marathon. We had the most incredible time. We're putting together the YouTube video for that trip. So excited for you to see it. And lots of people are asking me, what is next? Well, it's the Rome Half Marathon in October. We start training in May. It's actually my favorite time of the year to do a half marathon because the training is over the summer. It's a really nice opportunity to make some new friends, come together. And the Rome Half Marathon is so epic as you run towards the finish line. It's right in front of the Colosseum. We speak about the New York Half being an epic run, and it is because you run through Times Square and Central Park and Brooklyn and over the Brooklyn Bridge. But I think the Rome Half route is as iconic, starting in Circus Maximus and running towards the Colosseum. I've left a link in the show notes for all the details on Rome, and myself and Jamie will see you on Wednesday. Big thanks to Boyne Valley Honey for supporting the Good Glow this season, and you for tuning in today. Lots of love.